The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Exciting news! October sees the launch of the world's first live healthy breakfast show right here on UK Health Radio. Presented by the amazing Dr. Shan Hussein every weekday from 7 till 9 a.m. Also live streamed via YouTube and available on UK Health Radio's Listen on Demand for our global audience. Start your day the healthy way.
Recovery Today on UKHealthRadio.com. Join me and my guests on this voyage of recovery and discovery.
Hello, good afternoon or good evening to my listeners. My name is Jim Smith and welcome to Recovery Today. Well, today I have another old friend. In fact, all my interviewees have been old friends, haven't they? But or new friends. This is an old friend. I've known him some time. His name is Anthony. He's fondly referred to in the recovering community sometimes as Dublin Ant. I take that, Anthony, that's where you were born and grew up. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. In Dublin. Yeah. Westland Road.
Oh.
Where I was actually born was in Countess Markerby House.
Sounds quite grand.
Yes. Named after the Countess Markerby.
Yeah.
Who was in the uprising.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
Of 1916.
1916, yeah. Yeah. So what, looking back, reflecting back, and I know you have a lot of times maybe, what have you got fond memories or mixed memories of growing up as a child?
I have, certainly, mixed memories,
Yep.
I grew up in a family of, I had seven sisters.
Oh.
And a younger brother.
Yeah.
And then I had five elder sisters, or older sisters.
Yes.
Then I there was myself, there was a brother, and two other younger sisters.
Mm.
So all in all, there was 11 of us in the family.
11 of you.
Yeah.
I know the show is about you this week, but I can't help kind of bringing in my own experience. It's only been a couple of years that I'm one of 10, but that's only 10. I've got, I haven't got 11. I'm not one of 11, but one of 10. But I didn't grow up with them. So, And Are they all still alive?
No, they're not, unfortunately. I lost a brother recently, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And a sister. Now there's only two sisters left. My youngest sister.
Yeah.
And a sister who's a couple above me. And if I may, it's so easy to come part of me. It's Pat, Mona, Eileen, Olive, Theresa, Wally, Sally and Anne.
Wow.
They're my siblings.
Yes.
And they still reel off me like that.
Yeah, of course.
There's a reason for that, which I may explain later.
Well, maybe. Be good to hear. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you grew up in quite a large family in Dublin. What about your parents, Anthony?
Parents, my father was in Enniscorthy, New Ross, actually. He was born in New Ross. Lived in Enniscorthy and came to Dublin.
Yeah.
As a young man, having to, I believe, to look after his own brothers. He had three brothers or something like that.
Mm.
And he came to Dublin.
Yeah.
And that's where he met my mother, who was a Dublin woman.
Yes.
So, again, don't wish to go into too much of it.
No.
But that's where you would get me being called a Jackeen.
All right. Yeah.
Jackeen. Half Dublin.
All right.
Half country.
Ah, oh, is that what? That's the term.
That's the term. Yeah. Jackass. Jackie.
Oh, yeah.
The Jacks are here.
Yeah. And what did your dad do?
He's a bus driver.
Oh, was he?
Thank God.
Yeah.
So I say that because he certainly, I never wanted for anything.
No.
I never wanted for anything. Food, clothing, heat. The general things that, and love. They gave me what they had.
Yeah.
So yeah. I really never wanted for anything.
I mean, that seems to be a pattern. And in my own family now, you know, from Roscommon, I mean, when I've been over there a few times and they were 10. They were 9. Of course, they didn't know about me until 2 years ago. But, you know, when I hear them talking about their parents, my mum and their dad, and a lot of love. Well, with that kind of family, you just got to, yeah. So your dad was obviously a loving man, and he was stable, obviously. And
he was a bus driver, looked after for the CIA.
And
was always in work as such.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so as I said, I never felt I needed or wanted anything.
That's great.
He was always looked after.
Yeah.
My siblings will tell you I was spoiled.
Yes.
I believe being the first boy after 5 girls.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God I never got any hand-me-downs.
No, no, that was one blessing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, let's move on to school. School was in Dublin, I imagine. And
the nuns at first, to the age of 7, from 4 to 7.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when you make your Holy Communion, then you're thinking an adult, 7 years of age. Moved on to the Christian Brothers.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And if I may say,
yes, yeah.
I never had any problems whatsoever with the Christian Brothers.
No, no, no.
You know, or whatever. I don't know if that's me, that was me, that was my, who I am or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, being very fortunate. I know what I know today because of the Christian Brothers.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's like everything in life, isn't it? We've only got our own personal experience we can only share that, obviously, yeah, yeah. So it was good memories, really, of
school. Good memories, and fortunately as well, you know, as I said, with my parents, they really did. They got me in a piano accordion, and unheard of thing. I think I was about 8.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they sent me to music class.
Really? Yeah.
You know, with the Christian Brothers.
Didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I became part of the band, the Christian Brothers accordion band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I learned music and we went out playing all over the country, actually.
Really?
Yeah, with a chap called Frank Kauser. He was our conductor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and so I was blessed.
Wow, yeah.
And like yourself, Jim, I think music plays a big part in if it's in your life, play a part.
It does, doesn't it? It does. I mean, you just mentioned piano, accordion. I'm a guitarist, but you know, my brother in Ireland, my uncle John Joe Higgins was a very fine accordion player. He is. I've played with him. You know, the last couple of, when I went over there, we did a few tunes. But I'll tell you who's on in London soon, Sharon. And she's a great player. But it's a lovely instrument. It's really Irish, isn't it?
Accordion. Yeah, well, it's readily available, isn't it, no matter what. It depends on the accordion.
Yeah, yeah.
Mine was a piano accordion.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you know.
So, what about, school sounded pretty good. And did you come over to this country, or maybe I'm jumping ahead, after school, or did you work in Dublin first?
I grew up in a family of women.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't forget, you know, 7 sisters. My mother was a woman as well.
Yes, she
was. Thank
that's
God.
That's good. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't know what it was because she, you know, and I was the first boy after 5.
Yeah.
This is my own feeling.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, so at 13, age of puberty or whatever, I started to kick the traces, as it were.
Yeah, yeah.
My mother was a staunch Catholic, really very staunch. Yeah, you had no time for religion. My mother had no time for you.
Anything
else like that.
Yeah.
And I, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed, I was an altar boy from the age of 7 as well, to 15.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I enjoyed, I don't know what it was, but...
Yeah.
And so I never had any truck or bother about Christian Brothers, priests, or any religious stuff like that.
Yeah.
We knelt down and said the rosary every night, which I was a willing participant.
Yeah, sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, never against me or anything else like that. And thank God I did, because I do believe it's helping me today.
Sure, sure. But, you know, back to what did you, how long did you, how long was it before you left for this country, or was that
I
much
was 15.
Later?
No, I was 15 years of age, very young.
15.
Very young. I started to kick the traces.
Yeah.
I started to rebel, as it were. You know, maybe I should be doing this, maybe I should be doing that.
Yeah,
And I don't know. I don't know where it came from, but, you know, some fell amongst the stones and didn't grow, you know.
Yeah, that's
the,
right. Yeah.
The thorns or whatever. But I did.
You did.
And I was terrible. I sold my accordion and ended up coming over to Birmingham.
Good heavens, yeah. Wow.
And I found myself in Birmingham with this chap who was supposed to look after me.
Yeah.
He disappeared. I haven't seen him from that day to this.
Good heavens. So you were like alone in Birmingham?
Yes.
15?
15 years of age on New Street Station.
Yeah, yeah. Good heavens. Yeah.
And the people there that saw me, because I tell you, I had golden red hair.
Yeah, yeah.
So I stood out like a torch.
Oh, you must. Well, yeah. You must have done.
Walking around New Street Station, 1960. And these people on the station, the Irish lads or whatever, terminology dossers or whatever but one of them said, excuse me, you know, what are you doing walking around here? You shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
And took me along to the Salvation Army where we had the breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
And I was sitting over the breakfast. He says, you don't want to be doing this.
No.
He said, why don't you join the army? There's a recruiting office down the road. And that's two of those men were my referees.
Wow.
They gave me references and I joined the British Army.
How old were you? 16?
I was 15. I told them I was 18.
Told them you were 18. Oh.
I told them a lie. Wow. I told them I was 18. And obviously, but I had just left school, so I did a few tests.
Yeah.
You know, and sailed through those, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm not sure whether I was clever or whatever I was, but they certainly. I had what they wanted, and they put me forward to be a telegraph operator.
Ah.
So I joined the Royal Corps of Signals.
Well, you know what? This is as good a time as any, really, to play your first piece of music. And in a sense, it's kind of relevant. It's Kenny Rogers singing The Gambler, and this was quite a gamble at the age of 15, wasn't it?
Very much so.
Telling them you were 18, joining the British Army. Anyway.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us. And he began to speak. He said, son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces and knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice. So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, if you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away, knowing what to keep. Cause every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser, and the best that you can hope for is to die in your sleep. And when he'd finished speaking, he turned back toward the window, crushed out a cigarette, faded off to sleep. And somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace that I could keep. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold 'em,
when to hold 'em,
know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Well, thanks. That was Kenny Rogers, great artist, singing The Gambler. It's a very big song for him. And yeah, I was thinking, Anthony, as that song was playing, that you took a big gamble yourself, didn't you?
Certainly did. Wasn't aware of it.
No, no. But you certainly did. And you were in the army for, is it a few years?
I did 6 years, one hunt did. I served 6 years, 134 days.
Wow, yeah.
When I was unfortunately asked to leave.
Ah, now we get to the crux of the problem. Was that anything to do with perhaps your drinking?
Everything.
Everything to do. So it was obviously manifesting in a kind of really quite outward way, the result. Yeah. What was that? Give me an idea of what was happening.
The Jekyll and Hyde.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Lovely young boy, lovely young man. Just everything else, do anything for you.
Yeah.
Give me a drink.
Mr. Hyde
come out. Instant gobshite, we used to say.
That's right,
Excuse me if you're using the term, but.
No, that's right.
My mouth opened.
Yeah.
And God knows what was coming out.
Yeah.
And got me into trouble.
So they. It wasn't a court. You were asked to leave, really.
Well, after the 6 years. I did quite a bit of service. I was lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
I went down and I said I was with the RASC
on
the LCTs, the landing craft. Landing craft.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed life and everything.
Mm.
It's unfortunate that, as I say,
yeah.
You know, I'd be coming back on board, or even then when I was asked to leave, I think they realised I was too young or immature.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I was sent
to Germany then.
Yeah. Oh.
I did 3 years in Germany in a place called Osnabrück.
Oh, I've heard of Osnabrück. Yeah. It was quite a well-known forces base.
Yes, it was actually. And I was within the... I was attached... became a telegraph operator.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was pretty good at that trade.
Yeah.
So I was attached to other regiments to send signals back to base or wherever you want. Yeah. And I was attached to the Royal Engineers. Mm. If I ever got into any trouble at all in my life, never mind anywhere else.
Yeah.
It was always drinking like
alcohol related. So, okay, so you left the army, and what did you do then? Did you stay in Portsmouth? Or?
No, I was now in Osnabrück.
Oh, you were in Osnabrück, yeah.
I'd done 3 years in Osnabrück, and I was sent to Aden.
Oh.
And I was in Aden then for a year, and then I was again, I wasn't a bad telegraph operator. No, again, no. I was asked to go to Africa.
Mm.
With the when Swaziland, Bechuanaland, Basutoland were getting their independence,
yes, that's right.
I was sent over there to liaise back to Middle East Command,
right?
As the signaller, if you like, you know what I mean. And again, alcohol reared its head there, so my tongue.
So when did you actually cut ties with the army?
1966.
I see.
Yeah.
So what happened then?
Well, then, because of that, they sort of gave me a few chances. They sort of said, don't cut down, or you don't do that.
That's right, yeah.
You're out. Yeah. They put me on probation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think about three or four times I was put on probation.
Yeah.
I'm a good boy when I'm under stress.
Yeah.
Boys, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But then in the end, they got sick and tired of being sick and tired of me.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mister, you were asking me to leave and I was discharged. Service is no longer required.
Yes, that's right.
It's not so much a dishonourable, but it was a dishonourable for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know. So talk us through the next...
I then went home to Ireland.
Went back to Ireland.
Tried to live again within my family.
Yeah.
But this demon this demon, whatever it was that alcohol causes within me.
That's right.
When I and alcohol mix, it causes, I don't know.
It just
brings out that the Jekyll and Hyde.
That's right.
And going back and trying to live in a decent home, decent Catholic home and everything else like that, and try to adhere, if you like, again, to discipline.
Yeah.
You know, don't tell me what to do.
No.
Please.
So how long did that last?
So it on and off. I had to go and live with a sister and then another sister.
Yeah.
And then I was forever running. I was a runner.
Running.
I don't know. Do you ever see that picture of the crying boy?
Yes.
With the red hair and everything. That's me.
That was you.
That was me.
Yes.
You know, it just, and I was always in tears.
Yes.
I think I got into trouble and I think I cried my way out of it.
That's interesting you say that, because when I was drinking and getting into some scrapes, I used to cry my way out of it.
I've tried to.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting.
So even when I see that picture today,
I
remind myself of, and I tell you, you know, seven sisters, seven beautiful, you know, beautiful girls, my brother and everything, you know, love them, still do to this day.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, they're still living in my memory. Yeah. I thank God for them.
Yeah.
Because I'm the person I am because of them.
That's right.
They gave me all their principles and ideals and everything else like that. I may not have used them at that time.
No.
But they gave them to me.
But the wonderful thing is, Anthony, because, you know, really jumping ahead, they've seen you in recovery, haven't they?
Thank God.
For many, many years.
Quite a few of them.
Long time.
Yeah.
So, okay, right. So, did you stay in Ireland?
No, I could not.
Running.
Again, I was doing the running and lack of discipline.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I couldn't. I was probably intolerable, especially my tongue. You know, with my mother, we were at the same temperament, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and this, that, and the other. So I did another runner and I came back to London. Again, back to London. I run away to London.
Yeah.
Ended up in London with a friend of mine down at the Elephant and Castle.
Ah, in fact, that's what we're near that now, aren't we?
We're about a mile and a half, 2 miles away from the Elephant and Castle.
So things come around in circles.
That was 1967, 67.
Wow.
67, because then I actually lived with him.
Yeah.
Chatteris Square down at the Elephant. Isn't it funny how we remember those sort of
things? Yeah.
And I became a painter.
Oh, a house painter.
Well, a house painter.
Yeah, yeah. Dublin
man is not a house painter.
Yes. Yeah, most people.
Most Dublin men are, anyway.
Yeah.
Give them a brush and they'll paint you.
There was a, you know, when I started listening to folk music, Joan Byers was one of my favourites. And there was a track on one of her albums called The House Painter. And I thought, wow, that sounds lovely, The House Painter. But, you know, it sounded really genteel. And, well, I mean, it is a skill, obviously. But you're right. A lot of people are.
They helped each other, you could see. And say, if you didn't have that, what you thought was a skill, they brought you along with it. That's how I was able to survive. By becoming a painter and stuff like that.
And actually, listeners, I've got to interject here. He's a very good house painter because he painted my bedroom about 4 or 5 years ago, a nice dark blue, and it's still looking very good. Well, there's a plug. But, okay, so I assume that the drinking deteriorated, or you deteriorated.
In that time, though, then I met the most beautiful lady. But where would I meet a lady as a drinker? Oh,
in a pub, yes.
In a pub. She was a lovely barmaid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we clicked, I don't know, whatever.
Again,
maybe the Irish barmaid. Yeah. I haven't a clue. But we clicked.
Yeah. Was she Irish?
No, she's not.
She's
a Londoner.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely lady and come from a lovely family as well.
Yeah,
And like I don't know, I wasn't aware at that time I was an alcoholic.
No.
I just an Irishman who drank.
Yeah, and there were lots of. In that era, there was a lot of Irishmen.
We went working. Oh, I was on the demolition as well. In the winter, you did the demolition.
That's right.
In the summer, you did painting.
Yeah.
And we all ended up back in the pub every night before going home.
And it was a huge community, wasn't it, in those days?
And I met up with this lovely lady.
Yeah.
we ended up having to get married.
I wasn't
able to seem to be responsible enough to do things the proper way. But we got married.
You got married.
And we had a lovely boy.
And you had a little boy.
And a girl.
Oh, a boy and a girl.
You know, Robert and Barbara Ann. You know. And but again, my alcoholism was just kicking in then. I think my codependency really kicked in. And now I had somebody who was willing to look after me, who loved me enough for me to misbehave. Not misbehave in any other way other than drinking, you know.
That's
what
right.
I mean, or whatever. And then I started to recognize that there was something wrong with my behavior when I drank.
Sure.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And other people were sort of, do you not think you should do something about that? Went to the doctor. Then the Maudsley.
Oh, you went to the... Yeah, I went to the Maudsley in the 60s for my drinking.
Yeah.
Saw a couple of people, saw a psychiatrist. And what was the outcome of
that? Well, again, the Maudsley, they sent me to a detox.
Oh, you had...
My first detox.
Yeah.
Kenmore Hall.
I remember Kenmore Hall.
Yeah.
I mean,
1969, 70, I went into Kenmore Hall.
Yes.
You know, I omitted to say, first of all, having gone to the Maudsley or something like that, I was 12 step by Camberwell Stan and his wife, Dorothy. Yes.
I must say for the listeners, because not everybody knows these little phrases, 12 stepping means that
somebody comes to the house.
Somebody comes to the house who's in recovery, has had the problem of active alcoholism, and helps and guides the unfortunate person. I mean, this it was Anthony. I say unfortunate, but was that a turning point?
Because I was in part of my alcoholism, part of the illness I found is part of great denial.
Yeah, of course.
I don't have the illness.
No, that's right.
You know, if I comb my hair, it'll be different.
That's it.
If I wear a different shirt, I'll be different.
So you weren't ready at all.
I wasn't ready at all.
But the seed was sown.
Yes, certainly. But I went into, as I say, then I started to go into the Bethlehem Royal Hospital.
Yeah, you were a patient there.
I had 9 times was incarcerated in that lunatic asylum.
Yeah, well, I live near there now. Yeah. I live about a mile and a half away from there. But in recovery, a long time, I was a social worker and I did a clinic with a psychiatrist there. There was an alcohol unit there.
Yes.
Yeah. In the 90s, in the 80s, I think. But
Whitley House.
That's it. Yeah.
And then different how I ended up in there so much.
Yeah.
Because I kept going back, please help me, please help me. Pleading, crying.
Yeah, yeah.
That crying boy, that red-haired crying boy. And you know, thank God they never gave in on me.
No.
As well, but they detoxed me and then would ask me to go somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
For my treatment, and I wouldn't go.
You wouldn't go, no.
No, because I'm not that bad.
That's right.
Denial, that river
That's
in Egypt.
That's it, the river in Egypt. Well, look, let's bring it on home. And in fact, that your second choice of music is Mr. Sam Cooke. With that, bring it on home to me. And why did you choose that?
When you hear it for a start, the name may not mean anything, but as soon as you hear the music, you'll realize why.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you
Well, that was Sam Cooke, and yeah, we realise now, Anthony, why you did choose that, the lyrics of Sam Cooke. But you mentioned Stan a few minutes ago, and he kind of guided you into a 12-step fellowship, and eventually, like a lot of us...
Yeah, having lost...
You lost everything, didn't you? You lost your marriage?
And I ended up in a wheelchair.
Did you?
Peripheral neuritis.
Yeah.
Alcoholic poison of the bloodstream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Family came over, took me to Lourdes.
Did they?
I went to Lourdes into the waters, everything else like that.
Yeah.
I had a miracle in Lourdes and I got out and went on the booze again.
Yeah.
In Lourdes.
Did you?
Yeah. My mother was having a heart attack.
And
I'm drinking.
Yeah.
And the reason I mentioned that, sort of things, is that's the power that alcohol
The power of alcoholism, yeah. That's right.
You know, no respect for even your own mother
who is
having a heart attack.
No, that's right. I know. But thank God. And when was that approximately? When you had your last drink?
When I had my last drink was 19th of June 1982.
Was it 82?
Yeah, 1982.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm still only a newcomer to you.
Yeah. Tim. Well, I don't know. I mean, 82. Mine was only 76. There's only 6 years difference.
Yeah.
So that's a good long time, isn't it?
Now it is. Thank God.
A day at a time.
This year, I think. What is it? This year, 37, 38.
Yeah. And you've probably done it a day at a time, haven't you?
Just definitely. 24 hours blocks.
That's right.
Can't do it any different.
Yeah.
You'd be well. It's about getting well, isn't it? It's about the 12-step program.
It is.
And having a look at yourself.
Yeah, it is, of course. And realising that alcohol is but the symptom and we have to... But you... Did you ever have formal treatment at the beginning, or you...
Oh, yeah, no, I wouldn't say formal treatment.
Well, yes, rehab.
Yes, I did.
You did, yeah, you did.
I went into a place called Hartley House in Ealing.
Yeah, I remember, I've heard of that. I was there for two years. Yeah.
Not drinking.
It was an extent,
yeah. Again, you know, trying to get me rehabilitated into being into the system.
That's right, yeah.
Unfortunately, I drank again.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I drank again.
Yeah.
And it was really down to a young lady that I actually stopped.
Right, yeah.
Because I got into a relationship. I tried to save her.
And
tried to, as you do.
As you do.
Can't save yourself, but you try and save somebody
else. That's right, yeah.
And I saw what alcohol was doing to her and realised that that's exactly what it had been doing to me.
Yeah.
But I needed that mirror.
Sure, yeah. So you hardly, and eventually you stopped. And did you start your recovery in London, or were you somewhere
else? No, I was back home in Ireland.
Back in Ireland.
My family came over and rescued me time after time.
Thank God.
My
for poor
fans. Mother and her poor friends came over.
Wow.
And would take me back on the train.
Yeah.
The shame that I must have put my family through.
Yeah.
It's a shame based illness. We know.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
But again. You know, thank God, hopefully they forgive me, and I don't do it today.
No.
I think that's the most important thing.
No, well, they've had, over 35 years of seeing you, you know, sober.
Trying to make amends.
That's right.
Trying to make amends.
So, look, let's reflect on recovery, and, I mean, it's a whole different world, isn't it? And you've done lots. I'm sure you've done some house painting in recovery, a lot of it. But also you chose, like a lot of us.
Yeah.
You came into the helping professions and you trained.
I went to college.
You, You went yeah, back to college. Tell the listeners about that.
Yeah, I went back to college. Yep. I was advised maybe, you know, the memory had gone.
Yeah.
Part of the illness of alcoholism has affected my memory.
Yeah.
And I was advised to maybe, you know, one of my nieces actually to do a bit of babysitting for her.
Yeah.
And when I was babysitting, she'd give me some maths.
Yeah.
And that started to stimulate my brain.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
You know, while I was babysitting, she'd come back and I'd be doing some sums or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And she'd correct it and give me some for next week. And she was such a big help.
Wonderful.
My family being so thank God for them. You know, and I'm talking about my nieces and cousins and,
external
family, you know, other than my own siblings and everything.
Sure.
Every one of them has been such a help, you know. But again, as I say, then I went to college.
Yeah.
And I started, and I found that most difficult.
What were you studying?
Introduction to counseling first.
Oh, wonderful.
Then I did 5 years in all.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, thank God I eventually got my diploma.
Yeah.
In integrative therapeutic counseling.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It's a mouthful to say. It's a mouthful to do as well.
Yeah. So you've worked in that field over the years, haven't you?
Again, my family helped me, you know, financially and supported me and all the way through that. Because I don't know about you, Jim, but with me, I'm not that good.
No.
I'm not good enough to do that.
No.
My self-worth is on the floor.
It's, yeah, yeah.
You know, as an actor, as I was.
Yes, that's right.
And I got so much support and so much encouragement,
you know,
from all my family, but especially one sister,
one
special, very special sister. They were all special.
But this
one, she's...
Yeah, you know, lovely.
Yeah.
And also your fellow, you know, person in recovery, they inspire us, don't they? Other people who've walked the same path, you know.
Everybody who, like yourself, Jim.
Yeah.
We help each other. We've been to some different places together.
Yes, we have, haven't we?
And met up in the most funny place.
Yeah, what about, got to tell the listeners this, because some of my life, and I know Anthony's in recovery, has been, you know, a chance meeting with somebody or a phone call, and, you know, I've gone halfway around the world. But it wasn't halfway around the world, it was Ireland. And we were at this convention, and someone said, "What are you doing at the weekend?" Anyway, cut a long story short, I was sitting on a Ryanair flight, I think it was, or Aer Lingus, over to Donegal, wasn't it, Anthony?
Yeah.
And you had your
suitcase full of clothes, and I had a suitcase full of paintbrushes.
That's right. But it was a great experience, and that's when I really kind of started to get to know you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always fascinated the way in recovery, you know, you meet someone and you start getting to know them, and then 10 years might go by and you don't see them. Then something else will happen, a bit like this.
Yes.
After years and years, and then you start getting to know them again. It's wonderful, isn't it?
It's absolutely
incredible.
Well, if I may tell the listeners, my birthday yesterday, I was 75 years of age. And when I went to the Morsley at 68, I was 24.
24,
And they said, "You will not see 30. No,
that's right.
75 yesterday. Thank you, God. my friends.
Family. That's quite something. Yeah, that really is. And I know you've really enjoyed Europe. It might not be fashionable to say in these days of Brexit, but Europe's a wonderful place, and you've enjoyed it, haven't you, over the years?
I'm off to Greece next week.
You're going to Greece next week, yeah.
Again.
Recovery Committee,
Cyprus. I go all over.
Yeah. No, that's right.
In recovery.
Yeah, in recovery, yeah. Yeah. No, it's been quiet. And I know we live a day at a time, but have you got any goals or visions for the ahead of you? Any plans? Well, you've got Greece coming up.
We've got Greece coming up, but hopefully we may make it to Detroit.
Oh, that's
next July.
Yeah, that's a yeah yeah.
That's somewhere.
Oh, is it next week? Next year?
Next July, yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Next July. Yeah, Detroit, 2020.
Michigan, yeah.
Detroit in July.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I don't know.
Yeah.
Again, it's down to my, you know, higher power.
Yeah, see.
And that's great. And isn't it funny, even in this part of recovery,
yeah,
the God I have today is completely different to the one I have.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting.
You know, it's a loving God, as I understand.
Yeah.
Not a punishing.
That's it, as you understand, yeah. That's what we're given, aren't we, in recovery? Yeah,
thank God.
Yeah. No, that's amazing, Anthony. Mm. Well, we play out with your final choice, but just before that, Well, it's been a pleasure to know you, and it is a pleasure to know you today. And
thank you for the opportunity to be able to share.
And it's funny how, because you know, I to the listeners, I was in Scotland last week, and I went into my guest house bedroom, and I saw the Wi-Fi code, so I got my laptop out, all ready to connect in, and the Wi-Fi code was Anthony. 1, 2, 3. And I had been thinking of Anthony anyway. And I thought, right, I'll ask him if I can interview him next week. Anyway, I think I've said this before, but I know your life has been silly. You know, if I put all my coincidences on a bookshelf, the shelf will break.
Yes.
So look, introduce your last piece of music and maybe say a few words about ABBA and...
Well, it is ABBA who played a great deal. Music has played a great part of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm quite musical. I did play the accordion and still tinkle on the piano.
Yeah.
And love a little bit of a sing-song with Jim.
Yeah.
And wherever we go.
Done that, yeah.
The old voice has been going, so I haven't been of the last couple of years, but hopefully getting back into it now.
Yeah.
And I would like to thank ABBA and thank you for the music.
It's been a pleasure, Anthony. Thank you.
I'm nothing special. In fact, I'm a bit of a bore. If I tell a joke, you've probably heard it before. But I have a talent, a wonderful thing, 'cause everyone listens when I start to sing. I'm so grateful and proud. All I want is to sing it out loud. So I say thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for sing it out to everybody.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and join me next time.
Here's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drinking problem. The number is 0800 917 7650. That's 0800 917 7650. The number of Narcotics Anonymous, this is a fellowship for anyone who has a drug problem. That's from 10 a.m. till midnight. The number is 0300 999 1212. 0300 999 1212. And finally, Al-Anon, which is a fellowship to support family and friends of the alcoholic. It's from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The number is 0207 403 0888. That's 0207 403 0888.